And welcome to Tokelore.
I'm Sarah.
I'm Kiki.
Get stoned with us as we discover what folklore is and where to find it.
And as we learn about ancient and contemporary cultures.
All while imbibing in local cannabis. In a galaxy far, far away.
Actually, not that far away. We're still in our home galaxy, right?
Well, yeah, but it's a figure of speech.
Oh, like once upon a time?
Yeah. Yeah. So, like I was saying, in a galaxy far, far away.
I know this one. May the Force be with you.
On Tokelore. May the 4th, after 420.
Yes. We'll just keep the celebration going.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's enjoyable.
What are we smoking tonight?
Oh, yeah. So this is a strain grown by a local friend, and it's called Lion Jabba.
Mmm. Very appropriate.
Yes.
I'm going to look up some Star Wars-themed strains here for you peeps to keep an eye out for.
Okay.
Okay, we've got Master Yoda, Skywalker OG, Lightsaber, Jedi Kush, Death Star, Ewok, Lemon Jedi, and I'm sure there are so many more.
Oh, yeah.
But keep an eye out for them.
Yeah. I mean, this one was Lion Jabba, so I'm sure there's something with lion in it.
Mm-hmm.
Crossed with a strain.
Yep.
Such fun, goofy names. I enjoy that. I really like a lot of the cake strains.
Oh, yeah.
They're all very
good. We've got some of that from Galen.
Oh, yeah. Coffee cake. Oh, it's a dream. It was, we still have some left over from our 420 episode. It is a 2-to-1, so it's stronger CBD over THC, but it just feels lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Some pre-rolls from Apotheca. I'm going to finish this pipe.
Do it. Finish that bowl. I have a special bowl for today that I've been saving. I cleaned it, and I saved it just for today because it's got R2-D2 on it.
Check the Instagram, folks.
Yep.
There's a picture of it with the nug before we ground it up.
So, to celebrate May the 4th, we... So, to celebrate May 4th, we are going to talk about Star Wars. Duh.
And revisit a topic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we said we were done with our Revenant series, but I guess this is sort of a PS I love you to our Revenant series, because Jedi become Revenants.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
Qui-Gon Jinn found the secret. And then Yoda, in turn, also found the secret.
Ben Kenobi.
Mm-hmm.
Obi-Wan.
So we, it was the tarot tangent. We touched upon the hero's journey, and I just raved about Joseph Campbell. So we are going to talk a little bit more about it, and we kind of touched a little bit how Star Wars fits into the hero's journey. It's also called
a glove.
It does.
Like a glove.
George Lucas made it. Based off of the monomyth, which is another word for it. And I decided to rewatch episodes 4, 5, and 6. These are the ones
with the originals
from the 80s that are, oh wait.
Star Wars came out in 1977, the year I was born.
And then
I think. There you are, folks. You know how old I am.
Didn't it finish in 83?
Or 84. I'm not certain, but yes.
Yeah, 77 to 83.
Yeah.
Ish. I'm going to just say ish, save myself some emails.
Well, and for how long it took them to make movies back in those days, they were done filming often a year before the movie comes out.
Honestly, The costumes for those movies.
70s all the way.
Oh, but impeccable. Like, beautifully done. Like, C-3PO, I remember watching it and being like, holy shit, his costume. You would think it would be very easy. It's not easy because you have to put an actor in that. But then you have all of these exposed wires. And then you have to think about how the environment is affecting the metal and how that's going to look. I'm just like, that's really cool. And I think, didn't the Mr. Henson get involved as well?
Yes. Actually, his partner, Frank Oz, okay. who does Miss Piggy and a couple other major staples in the original mm-hmm. Jim Henson crew, was Yoda.
Mm-hmm.
He was the voice of Yoda. He was the puppeteer for Yoda.
They should have kept him a puppet. Like, that was just so much better. Honestly, I'm looking at the CGI now, and CGI is so dated. It's very easily dated.
Yeah.
And it looked great for then.
Right. But now it's like, oh, it's a little jarring.
Yeah.
That's why I really am appreciating the fact that people are acknowledging that deficit in a film and are actually going out of their way to engage artisans mm-hmm. in puppetry to do much more realistic renditions for science fiction and fantasy movies, yeah. which I think is beautiful.
I mean,
keep the artists paid and Guillermo happy.
Guillermo del Toro.
Yes.
I mean, he fills in the backgrounds mm-hmm. with CGI to, like, give more depth to the scene. But when you go to the troll market, that is all there. Yeah. That is literally there.
It's beautiful.
That is the level of detail that George Lucas put in each and every set. And yes, honestly, I didn't mind the newest one.
What?
The newest Hellboy.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet. I'd like to.
It's very gory. Heads up.
Well, I got the impression that it was trying to be more like the comic books.
Mm-hmm.
Because the initial Hellboy that they did make was, they just made changes enough that it was definitely a different vibe. I love that Hellboy. I'm a big fan of Ron Perlman.
Mm-hmm. So
I enjoyed. I didn't realize that he was Beast from Beauty and the Beast.
Yes.
The TV series from the 80s. It was a guilty pleasure of mine.
Not a bad show. I didn't finish it. I did start it. I never got to the season where she had his baby, which... cool. I didn't get there. But then I found out she dies in one season, and then he's just with some other lady. And I'm like, that's not okay. I'm good. If that's what's going to... I'm good.
Like, okay. Now you're just dragging it out and turning it soap opera.
Yep. So I rewatched those movies, and I put them to the hero's journey. And I started with A New Hope. And so... I'll post this picture on our Instagram that I used. I really like it. I really like this illustration. It's just kind of cute. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But the first step in a hero's journey is a call to adventure. I mean, how else are you going to start it?
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
Yep. It's call number one.
Mm-hmm. That's the moment.
That is literally the moment. Who is she?
Make her come back.
Because, and it's... interesting, I can think of a couple of other hero movies and hero stories where the hero starts out in a very pastoral setting.
Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed that?
Yes.
Always outside of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And then the adventure brings him to the chaos of the city or a chaos of a battlefront or something. Mm-hmm. And so I just think that's really interesting that it's always compared.
Right.
They're always together, those opposites.
Yep.
So anyways, he starts out on a moisture farm. I believe it's a moisture farm.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to, how does it go? He wants to go to Toshi.
Toshi Station to pick up some power converters. Yes.
Yeah, but he doesn't get to. He has to take care of these droids. And then he stumbles upon the recording. That's the first call to action. Second call to action, R2-D2 runs away. That immediately, as soon mm-hmm. as he has a break in his routine, that immediately...
opens the door.
Mm-hmm. Third call to action, discovering his...
mentor.
Not his mentor, the dead bodies of his aunt and uncle.
Oh, that, yes, that crystallizing moment. Usually can't traumatic one where you just, it's like the door. Yeah, not exactly Star Wars related, but a book series that just jumped to mind that reminded me of this in a similar way is... Wizard's First Rule.
Hmm. I've not read it.
It has a similar, like, can't ever go back moment that's pretty crystallizing.
Yeah.
And really kind of shoots the book into sort of overdrive from there forward. It's very intense.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it happens in Aragorn.
Mm-hmm.
His house burns down and his uncle dies.
Yeah. Can't go back?
Nope. Cannot go back. And I think it's really interesting that the scene where Luke discovers his aunt and uncle's charred skeletons, mm-hmm. it is actually supposed to allude to Hiroshima. It was very purposely staged that way.
Where did you read that? I've not heard that.
I don't know where I read that. That's one of those things that just I've heard it. I'm curious
how much is that is based on fan theory.
Google it. I'm looking for scenes. Okay, this is a list that's not giving me all the things that I want. Why is it bringing up Eternals? That's not what I want. Okay, I don't know. It's just something that I remember hearing or reading somewhere a long time ago, and then also it just being repeated.
So I don't doubt it. It sounds very plausible. I'm just curious the source. So, listeners, if you know the source, shoot us a message on Instagram.
It's going to drive me crazy.
Yeah, please give us some info, because there's definitely a lot. It being a thing that I've spent my whole life having general conversations with friends and just being mm-hmm. total nerds about these stories that we've had our whole lives. It's interesting to see the differences in how this different generation experienced the episodes 1, 2, and 3 as their first Star Wars movies.
They were my first Star Wars movies.
Right? And it's just it's a very unique concept. Like, our experience and exposure to it give us a different appreciation or perspective mm-hmm. on it.
Oh, wait. I do it's have so to say that I did watch episodes 4, 5, and 6 before ever seeing 1, 2, and 3, I promise. But they were the first Star Wars that I saw in the theater. So that was really cool. So I enjoy episodes 1, 2, and 3. But I agree, there are some problems. So the next step after you have your call to adventure and you are broken from your routine and your regular world or your regular life, you have to meet a mentor who's kind of going to guide you over that threshold and through your trials. This is obviously Ben Kenobi saving Luke from the Sand People, which they call them Sand People in episodes 4, 5, and 6, but they call them Tuskens in episodes 1, 2, and 3. And I just think that's really interesting.
I don't think he'd probably fleshed it out that much.
I don't know. I'm just like, but why'd they choose Tuskens? Anyway, it's not really that important. So, and then also Ben Kenobi knows more about Luke's father, and Luke never hears about his father, which, considering what he does in episode 2, I would understand mm-hmm. him not really wanting to talk about that. Really traumatic part of the uncle, I mean.
Yeah.
Okay. So after he's met his mentor, he's got his call to action, he is on his way. The next step is crossing the threshold. This is traveling to Mos Eisley and hiding from the Empire. So, like, almost his descent into the cantina is his crossing the threshold, almost literally.
Mm-hmm.
So,
as he walked into the bar.
Mm-hmm. And then you go through a series of trials and failures, and you gain some helpers, and you grow some new skills.
That's where Han and Chewie come in.
Mm-hmm. They're his new allies. So you always have like a fellowship happening. Like, mm-hmm. think of the movie Willow. He's got his best friend on it. And then
Mad Mardigan.
Mm. Guys, they're revamping Willow.
What?
They are.
I mean, that's cool and all, but.
Val Kilmer's not in it, but Warwick. Warwick Davis.
Warwick Davis, yeah.
Yeah. He's in it.
Cool.
They did a little teaser, and I think it's on HBO Max, or it's on Disney Plus, one of them.
And but he's older now.
He's older. The teaser that they did, he was acting like a complete, like, impatient asshole to the rest of the cast members, and the cast members had never seen Willow, like, in the teaser. I don't know about it in real life. Anyways, right on back to Star Wars.
Right. New skills, death and rebirth.
Trials and failure. Yeah, he doesn't actually get to death and rebirth yet in this movie. There is a death, but not the hero's death and rebirth. And it doesn't always have to be an actual death. But yes, there is a death, which is very, very interesting.
It's a big traumatic moment for him.
I promise. They are all in there. They're just not all in the first movie. So I considered the death of Obi-Wan Kenobi
as part of his trials.
Like, how is he going to continue on without mm-hmm. his mentor, even though his mentor never is gone?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no body. I have questions about that, but we'll get to that after. Some other trials and failures that I noted were, okay, Gaines, Chewbacca, and Han Solo as helpers. The escaping Tatooine is a trial.
Rescuing the princess is gaining another helper.
Yes, that. And also, that was a trial to save her.
Mm-hmm.
And destroying the Death Star, all very much a trial. And growth and new skills. Just think about the scene where he's blinded with the blaster shield on his helmet. And mm-hmm. he's got to not fight off
the droid.
Reflect yeah. the droid's shots or whatever mm-hmm. without being able to see. A classic growth mm-hmm. of new skill right there. And also the moment when Obi-Wan Kenobi from within the Force tells Luke to trust the Force, not use his eyes. Trust the Force. And so he turns off his computer and he freehand shooting down the Death Star. Which that's really cool. That's where we got with the first movie, not even halfway through his hero's journey.
But these movies were also made with intent of them being a trilogy, so they were very deliberately orchestrated endpoints because they each one leave off in a good mm-hmm. place.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not a good thing, like the end mm-hmm. of The Empire Strikes Back, because Han's been taken away, but Luke and Leia are safe, mm-hmm. and there's this new secret that he has about his connection mm-hmm. there, and there's this interesting sort of reunion mm-hmm. basically between the friends,
right?
But the impetus that we are gonna go get him back mm-hmm. and that's gonna there's happen. A plan, it's coming.
They literally formulate the plan right mm-hmm. before Lando takes off with the Falcon, Millennium mm-hmm. Falcon. Okay, so in Empire Strikes Back, remember he was told in the beginning,
jumped right over the all of Empire. Oh, no, you said Empire Strikes Back. Yeah. I thought I was thinking Return of the Jedi.
We're not there yet.
I know. My brain was just plugging those words
in. Episode 5.
Yes.
So in Episode 5, at the very beginning, Obi-Wan Kenobi tells him that he's going to go to the Dagobah system, and he's going to find Yoda, and Yoda will train him in the Force. New mentor, new helper. But this helper doesn't go with him like the others do. And then, of course, you have growth and new skills developing while he's with Yoda,
mm-hmm.
Doing all those classic Jedi tricks that we're familiar with. And then also, I believe it's an important part of the Jedi knighthood process is discovering the temptation of the dark side and knowing kind of where you lie on that spectrum of how much more tempting it is for you versus somebody else. That would be the scene where he goes into that cave and mm-hmm. faces Darth Vader, who is actually Luke Skywalker. That was a really cool scene.
Oh, the death.
And then he dies. So
metaphorically.
The scene, yes, metaphorically. Well, he kind of tries to kill himself.
But, I mean, there's a certain amount of... Sorry, I'm making a lot of excess noise by wiping down the crap all over my computer. I should stop while I'm trying to
talk. Well, we can take a quick break here and, mm-hmm. repack our bowls. So if you're sitting at home, it's a good time to...
Take
if you
a
finished
break.
Your bowl, just,
Time for a toke break.
Time for a toke break. Still smoking. What a pleasant flavor. Ooh. That sounded good. Crackle.
You heard it?
Mm-hmm.
Good. That's what I was going for. I actually bonked it with my hand afterwards, though, too, so.
All right.
We're
on death.
Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
Death.
So, that famous scene that everybody misquotes?
Mm-hmm.
The one where they're like, Luke, I am your father. He doesn't actually say that. He says, I am your father. Search your feelings, Luke. You know it to be true. Or something like that.
That's adorable. But yes. No, that's not true. It's impossible.
When I found out that Mark Hamill is the voice of the Joker,
uh-huh.
for a long time it really messed me up. Because I'm like, I don't hear it, Mom. Like, he is too sweet to sound like the Joker. Like, no. There's no way Luke Skywalker is the Joker. No. So, yeah, that scene... Oh, and, okay, my mom said that if I listen carefully at that scene, I can kind of hear the Joker voice and his scream of no. I still don't hear it, but I don't know.
Have you seen him now? Like,
yeah.
He's got a gravelly voice as an adult.
Yeah, but
he's like, also the voice of Skeletor in the new Masters of the Universe.
I feel like I recognized his voice.
Yeah.
It's just like, mm-hmm. That's cool. And unbelievable.
Yes. Okay. So.
Oh, yeah. Luke tries to kill himself.
Yeah.
Because he's like, Darth Vader's trying to tempt him, like, come with me, we will rule the universe
and so he throws together. Himself.
And he throws himself off the thing and very neatly goes into
does
this pipe.
Does he throw himself off to kill himself, or does he sense the Force enough to know that he can get out of there?
I don't know. Maybe he used the Force to angle his his trajectory. Fall. I don't know. I wasn't sure what to make of it. I kind of chalked it up to bad CGI.
Because it was just probably done in front of a green screen.
Yeah, and they just kind of moved the hole to where he was falling. Anyway, so he falls pretty much almost to his death. But his rebirth was when Leia saved him and Luke got his hand replaced. And, okay, I thought this was very interesting because in episodes 4 and 5, Luke Skywalker is wearing almost white. Exclusively white.
Yes.
Except for when he's wearing orange, which also still has white on it. So this is consistent with, like, neophytes or initiates would typically wear white in a rite of passage. And then after, they can add a little color, I guess. So I just think this moment when he faces Darth Vader and chooses to fall instead of come to temptation, I think that was a rite of passage for him.
Mm-hmm.
And also that learning that knowledge. And Yoda kind of says as much in Return of the Jedi when he's like, I'm sorry that you went because you weren't ready. You didn't have the skills to face that information. And I'm like, that's pretty deep. Yoda's deep. Does Yoda smoke, you think? Do you think he'd be a stoner?
Yep. Totally.
I would hope Yoda would be a stoner. Mm-hmm. And this is also the next step in the hero's journey, revelation, when Darth Vader is revealed to be his dark father. Thank you so much, Pitch Perfect, for revealing that little tidbit of information, because it makes so much sense now that you think about it. Like, oh yeah, duh. Yeah, that's what that would mean. Why? It's very obvious now. All right, so now we're on Return of the Jedi, and we're edging towards the end of the hero's journey and a return back to the normal world.
It's such a delightful one. I really liked Return of the Jedi. It was lovely to see a very empowering the good guys to fight an impossible fight.
Yeah.
It was sweet.
It was well done.
Yeah.
So Return of the Jedi, there's another revelation. When he goes back to Dagobah, it is revealed that there's another who's adept in the Force, and it is his twin sister. And then Luke is like, Leia, like, I think I knew this the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Even though there was a little bit of a, like, a romantic interest towards in the beginning, and then when Han Solo was very clearly in love with her, he was like, okay, let's step back.
Return of the Jedi!
Yeah! Also, remember how I said neophytes typically wear white? He wears black in Return of the Jedi now.
The whole time.
The entire time he wears black.
I think that there's sort of multiple things that can be communicated by that. Not just his initiation into being a full Jedi, but also sort of a sign of that loss of innocence.
Yes.
Where he's like, okay, I know now what it's like to be tempted by the dark side and what that does to me. And just having a sober look at not just being a Pollyanna.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good, you're evil, meh.
I think you guys might have heard that one. That was Hades. That's the noise he makes all the time.
Oh, yeah.
It's
a trill, it's not a meow.
Yeah, Luke Skywalker also knows that he has a little bit more in common with his father now that he has a cybernetic or a
hand.
A hand.
Yeah.
Because his father's whole body
has been pieced back together by...
Mm-hmm. Yep. In fact, Anakin actually loses an arm.
I was going to say, I thought...
That was the first time Anakin had a... I think it was the same arm, too. That was probably intentional.
Mm-hmm. mirroring stories. Mm-hmm. See how they could end up differently? And then by the time you get to the last three movies, it's like, bah! Throw that out the window.
Yeah, he's finally changed. He's fine-tuned control of the Force. He's superficially completed all the tasks to become a Jedi Knight. I mean, he's made his own lightsaber. He needs to confront
his father. Exactly. Like, that is still hanging out there, mm-hmm. that final...
The test.
Test.
And there's atonement. I think his atonement was he really wanted to save his father from the dark side. I think he sensed good in him. Either he sensed it or he wanted to sense it, and he wanted to save his father. And I think he ended up doing that.
I think he understood the connection and the love that was still there. Like, he could sense that about him mm-hmm. as far as his attunement to the Force. And it's not till he became a master that he could probably really see that. To help him confront him without right. killing him.
Right.
Gets gift. Yeah. Celebrating the end of the Empire and...
gaining Leia as a sister. Right. Like, now that's officially... Like, he's had this information, but he hasn't really been able to share it and or even act on it. And now he can. And then he offers to train her with the Force. He's like, yeah, and you'll be adept at it too. Which is kind of cool. Which suggests something genetic to it.
Considering it being passed down through family members,
mm-hmm.
I think that this is just going to dive right into the fan fiction. Mm-hmm. But this is where the story always was one of those, like, it makes sense that when those movies were over, they go on to continue to live their lives together. Mm-hmm. So Han and Leia have a history, and mm-hmm. they do get married and have children. And apparently, according to Disney, fall apart. I don't remember if that happened in the books.
No, it's because their relationship fell apart because Ben Solo turned to the dark side
mm-hmm.
and pretty much killed a bunch of other Jedi Padawans as his initiation to the dark side.
Which is not unlike what Vader did.
Yeah, so I think Leia focused more on saving the galaxy and trying to find her and help her son in that way. Whereas Han Solo, his MO is typically to run in some way. I don't know if that's actually what happened, but...
Or
run and still...
Or but maybe he really was more... It seemed like he was more dedicated to figure out how to connect with him.
Yeah.
I don't think he wanted to have anything to do. I think
he got lost, though.
Yeah. I think there's that, like, you know what you should do, and you're terrified you're going to fail at it, so you don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways. Okay, so that's Return of the Jedi.
Yeah. And that's the end of the monomyth.
Yeah.
Guys, so, that's it.
Are episodes 1-3 a monomyth for Anakin or Obi-Wan Kenobi?
This occurred to me, because I'm like, Because Obi-Wan Kenobi definitely has an initiation moment where he fully becomes a master, where he transitions from Padawan to master, and that's the moment that he kills Darth Maul, who killed his master. That was him passing the test. Instead of being overcome with anger for the death of his master and killing Darth Maul because of that, it was because he had control over his anger. It is fear. I think there's an argument.
I would like to think that that's more of a true hero's journey story arc, because Anakin
doesn't become a hero.
No. This is how he becomes a villain.
Right. So I'm like, okay, is this a monomyth? Is it for Anakin or for Obi-Wan?
Yeah, it definitely kind of turns that idea on its head.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some really interesting fan fiction ideas out there, and they're not substantiated, but they're like, what if?
Mm-hmm.
What if Padme and Obi-Wan had a thing before Anakin was in the picture. So there was feelings there that Anakin, being a young trainee, not fully understanding his emotions and why he feels jealous or jealousy to the level that he does. It makes sense. And if you watch the movies with that intent, part of what you're reading into their actions, so many things that Obi-Wan does that directly contradicts his responsibility as a Jedi, but is to save Padme.
I, however, would argue it would have had to have happened between the first and the second movie, because Obi-Wan does not trust politicians.
Mm-hmm.
He explicitly says that they are not trustworthy, that they kowtail to their constituents and nobody else.
When does he say that?
The beginning of episode one, when they are about to meet Padme.
Okay. And wouldn't it make an interesting story arc if he then falls in love with one?
Because that's why I'm saying it had to happen between one and two.
that would have been the key moment for it, too, because Anakin would be laughably way too young to be even considered a romantic partner on the scene. He was, like,
19 and she was 22. Not the actors. The actors were both 19, but the characters were 19 and 22.
4 years, huh? I feel like there was a bigger gap.
She was 14 when she was made queen, and he was 9.
Okay, so 5 years.
5 years. Oh, yeah. Oh, 19 and 24?
Maybe. That would make more sense. That's what it felt like.
Man, that is such... And there is such a difference in maturity there. I'm so surprised that there was also an attraction.
Exactly. I was just like, wow, you really like him young.
Like, and also, and why immature. Him? And you also, you disagree with his political points of view, and they raise red flags.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And she ignores them.
Yeah. Isn't that funny how we do that?
Why do we do that?
I don't know why we do that. Is there green still on that?
Yeah.
Cool.
I okay. kind of killed it, though.
It's okay. It's good.
Why is... Okay.
Who's the real prophesied chosen one to bring balance to the Force?
Yes. So this is a huge controversy. What does the prophecy actually mean when it comes to bringing balance to the Force? Now, there's the belief that in order for there to be balance, there has to be Sith and Jedi in equal measure, with equal amounts of power. It can't tip. But then Darth Sidious believed that balance can only be restored when the Sith fully are reborn and take over the universe. And that's balance.
By total domination.
Yes.
I guess.
And then the other one would be it's only balanced when there's all light and the Sith is totally dead, which the Jedi believed for a long time. They believed that they were dead for thousands of years.
No, they weren't. So I think there's something to be said as well for the idea of a myth being perpetuated, and this gets more into Dune territory, but a myth or prophecy gets perpetuated in order to ensure that there is always people seeking balance and keeping balance so that the power doesn't get unequally distributed, because then people abuse it. It doesn't matter how good your intentions were when you get there, you often become the villain. And so finding that balance and understanding, I think that it goes deeper than that, even though it may not address it in the movies so much. But like the concept of the way the Force is addressed and explained is that it is this thing that has to exist. It's like alchemy.
It's a symbiotic relationship through all living organisms.
You can't create something out of nothing.
Right.
And so there's sort of this give and take in how this religion helps keep balance in these unique power that can sometimes show up in human beings.
Yeah.
Right? Whether it's an evolutionary thing, but it's a way of acknowledging that this is a powerful enough thing that it needs to be trained or it needs to completely be shut down.
Because the people that learn about it without training often twist it for their own personal gain, which is how the Sith came back from the dead. But the contestants for being the chosen one are Anakin Skywalker, then Luke Skywalker, Rey Skywalker.
She's not and Skywalker. Now Grogu.
I know she's not. She takes the name Skywalker in honor of that connection to that family. But yes, she is a Palpatine. So Rey Palpatine Skywalker.
Right.
And then Grogu.
Yeah, and that's only for those of you who have access to Disney Plus, because that's part of the Mandalorian series. Mm-hmm. It's not even available to general public.
No.
I wish that they would put some of this stuff available, make this a little more easily available.
Very elitist.
Yeah, it is. I would say that, again, the idea of the prophecy of a chosen one means that they're all the chosen one. They're all playing that role in their generation.
I agree.
That there always needs to have that in order to hold the balance.
It's always going to be the cycle of bringing balance. There's always going to be one that overbalances the other. And
their stories are very different. I mean, Grogu's is still being told, so we have no idea how much his storyline may or may not follow.
Right.
His storyline technically takes place between Luke and Rey.
Right.
Historically, like in the universe.
I don't know, because they're going to do a series about Ahsoka. I'm sorry, I didn't watch the cartoon, so I'm so sorry if I'm saying her name wrong, but it looks like Ahsoka.
I think so, but I don't remember.
Yeah. So she's in the cartoons, and she's Anakin's Padawan, like his first Padawan.
She's very prominent in the Clone Wars cartoon series.
Yes. And
which is actually a really good series.
very good for kids.
As far as writing, it's some of the better Star Wars work that's out there.
Right. And I feel like it's appropriate for kids. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know what it says on there for age, but like 10, yeah. I feel like 9, 10. And then she appears in The Mandalorian as well. I feel like there's going to be, it's going to be fleshed out a little bit more in her series.
I'm curious how much of it is going to fill in that story of how she ended up there. Or does it pick up where they leave her?
Well, guess he's making a comeback into the Star Wars universe. Hayden Christensen.
I heard about this.
Yes, he is going to be reprising his role as Anakin Skywalker in the Ahsoka series.
Oh, so this is going to tell the story of how they fell apart?
Maybe. It's kind of the theory.
She was a child. Like, she was a small child when he took her on initially.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, but I don't know this.
Be interesting. I haven't seen all of them, but I have seen
several. The theory is that he's going to be in ghost form, in spirit form.
Ah.
This will be, because he dies.
Right. And he does technically comes back, which is interesting because this was one of the things George Lucas changed when he did like his remake director's cuts.
I remember
is
this.
Is that the end of Return of the Jedi, all of the dead Jedi show up in their revenant forms.
Right.
And you had Obi-Wan and Yoda and Anakin. But back when the movies were filmed, there was a very different actor who played Darth Vader.
Yes, he had already passed.
And he, what's that?
Yeah, I think he had already passed when they did that remastering.
But he was in the original. So the Star Wars Return of the Jedi, they changed it when he remade it, and it's Hayden Christensen's character.
Oh, shit.
If I remember correctly.
Fuck, you're right. No, you're right.
So it's like they reverse-aged him so that it was Hayden Christensen
remember,
as Anakin.
Honestly, I feel like I don't even remember there being a Darth Vader Revenant.
There was. It was just one of, like, who's that old guy next to Obi-Wan?
I remember Yoda, and I remember...
There were three of them.
Yeah, and now I feel like I'm... So the problem with memory, guys, is you can easily just change your memories.
Yeah. Recall is not a good thing for memory, actually. No. The less you try remembering something, the more accurate it is when you actually recall it.
Yeah.
Because every time you recall it, your brain changes it
just
a little bit. And the more you recall it, more it changes. And
it's like making a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy of like a tape.
Right.
And the quality deteriorates quite quickly.
Yeah.
So I think after Rey Palpatine has now balanced it, I think, I don't know. Because Grogu takes place between Anakin and Luke. So I gotta move it up there.
And he's very slow aging. Mm-hmm. So it's possible that he won't even be on the scene until after those other movies take place.
Maybe.
Like, it's a whole other Jedi thread.
Well, wait a second. Because there's another fan theory that has traced back his birth year. Because if they mention
he's
50 years old, he would have been born the same year as Luke Skywalker. Anakin Skywalker. Sorry. Sorry, guys. Anakin Skywalker.
Oh.
So this is kind of linked to a parallel theory in the Harry Potter universe. I don't know if you all are interested in that one at all, but
a parallel theory in Harry Potter.
Harry Potter and Neville Longbottom were actually born. They both kind of fit the prophecy. So it could have been either one of them.
That's right.
Because they were born in the same year and month.
They both had the same tragedies. His parents didn't die, though. They were driven insane.
Yeah. Yeah,
so, yeah. Left him an orphan as well.
Very sad story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in his own way, actually does really prove to be a hero. Mm-hmm. It was just that you were like, oh, shit, I wasn't paying attention to his story.
I forgot about that one.
Yeah.
And then he got hot. And you're like, oh, shit, who's that?
Mm-hmm. He's yummy now.
Okay, yes. Guys, I was today years old when I found this out.
Today
years old.
Oh, what'd you find out?
That Keira Knightley was in Star Wars.
Yes.
And I had no idea. I found a picture of both of them, of Natalie Portman and Keira Knightley in the same costume. I'm having a hard time telling the difference.
First of all, if you take a look over her shoulder, I'm pretty sure it's Natalie Portman right behind her.
Yep.
So you've got their faces side by side. They're very similar, but her brow bones,
they're
shaped very different.
Are different. That's
Natalie Portman has a little more almond shaping to her eyes, and Keira Knightley's do not.
Yeah.
they're a straighter bridge.
But still, I was, for some reason, when I watched it as a kid, because this came out in 1999.
They're very similar.
They look very similar, yeah. And they're typically wearing white makeup. So,
yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. I just thought that she was like a clone.
I do like
decoy.
The costume inspiration for Queen Amidala.
Oh my gosh.
Where did you find that?
Because
this is a talk show. This isn't a visible thing. So
dang it.
They can't see what we're looking at right now.
I will, and I'll make sure to put a bunch of these pictures on the Instagram so you guys have a reference. But check out Mongolian royal, traditional Mongolian royal garb. Oh my gosh.
Actually more elaborate than what they actually put Natalie Portman in for the movies. Yeah. It's pretty beautiful.
Oh, it's amazing.
And it's got some really strange like European crossovers with it.
And I think that's actual hair. Like, I don't think that's a headpiece. That's actual hair.
Oh, I'm sure that they're used to having wigs.
There are villages in Mongolia that never... No, I'm sorry. I think there's a village in China that they never cut their hair. The women never cut their hair. Never. They're very proud of it.
Uh-huh. Plenty of hair to work with.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. But it's just think about the red gown and the hair and the kind of the heart shape mm-hmm. with the tassels on it. Just think of that outfit and then look up
her Mongolian epaulets, royal garb. Though, on here are monstrous. They're very Queen Elizabeth in their shape with the epaulets over her shoulders where the cape goes over her shoulder, the difference there. And the volume of jewelry hanging down around her face, or beads or whatever that is. It's just fascinating, the crossover cultural mashup you see here in this historical photo. Anyways. That's
incredible. You guys got to look up Mongolian traditional royal garb.
It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right, moving on to midichlorians.
Mm-hmm.
Is this canon or not? So I always thought it was bullshit. Like, it was one of those, like, what? Why suddenly is this such a big deal? This makes no sense. Like,
I was 5 years old, so I sort of just kind of took it as it is.
Sure.
So I just was like, yeah, I just accepted that. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. This makes sense. Okay. So George Lucas conceptualized midichlorians in 1977 when he wrote the whole kind of story arc for Star Wars and added in these different drafts. And they weren't put into the screenplay until Episode 1.
Which was the fourth movie.
Yes.
Or fifth.
1999.
If you don't count Battle for Endor.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which is...
It's on Disney Plus, and I saw it and I'm like, maybe. Not quite in the mood at the moment. I'm a little Star Wars out. I've been watching a lot of Star Wars.
You haven't watched Battle for Endor yet?
No, I haven't.
It's so cute. So, as a kid, my brother and I had certain things that were very, like, defining. Like, loved Star Wars and loved the Ewoks. And we had this set of children's, like, cup and plate and bowl, like, dishes with Star Wars, like Ewoks, Battle for Endor.
Mm-hmm.
And so we each had our own set of these Star Wars bowls. They were so adorable. We had them forever. Just silly little things like that. Looking back, and I'm just like, yeah. I mean, they definitely did a good job marketing that to children. We grew up with that as like the it thing.
It's cute. It looks cute. I will watch it eventually.
Yeah.
Just, I've been watching a lot of Star Wars. they add in a science fiction aspect. And people who like to box Star Wars in as only a fantasy movie, which I see the argument, I do. I'm just one of those people that I like to sit in the middle of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I will offer you I will be the devil's advocate for you. And it is science fiction fantasy. It's science fiction fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
It's high science fiction fantasy.
High fantasy science fiction.
You can put them together and mash them up, because otherwise, how would you categorize Blazing Saddles?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a Western or is it a comedy?
Mm-hmm.
It's a Western comedy.
Sure.
It's like English is a lot like German, where you can just like put words together and it means a new thing. In German, you can just put a bunch of words together and it's a whole new word.
And they're very literal, too, because it's usually something that's like explains what it does.
Yes.
I'm like, the word for cell phone is handy.
Okay. I love it.
Like, how literal is that?
It's pretty handy. Yeah. It is a pretty handy thing to have.
Handheld. Whatever.
And it fits in my hand. Mm-hmm. I mean, not anymore. Phones are fucking huge.
They kind of go through iterations, I feel like.
But I would like to argue, even though they may not be considered canon because they weren't ever mentioned in episodes 4 through 6, mm-hmm. they are seemingly becoming more and more important now that Disney has control over the story. So you can tell an episode, they're essential in episodes. I've got to read Roman numerals, fuck, which means I have to math. And I'm high.
Seven through nine.
Okay. And their importance in the driving factor in the hunt for the child in The Mandalorian. They explain there, because Grogu has a very high M count, so he would make an ideal donor, which tells you they're doing something with those M's that they're counting, which is obviously midichlorians. And it is believed that, like, I don't know, I feel like Palpatine died in Return of the Jedi. I'm not sure how you come back from that, but apparently he came back from the dead because he figured out a way to manipulate midichlorians to create new life. Or, which I think is more likely, since...
He's a zombie.
Well, okay, remember, in the Clone Wars, who was the guy that approached Jango Fett to become a clone? It was Tyrannus, who was a... They knew him as a Jedi, but he was actually Count Dooku. I want to call him Count Dooku. I think that's what it is. Dooku that approached Jango Fett and got the clone army started so that they could take over the Empire with it. So I would not be surprised if those aliens also had a copy of Palpatine's genetic body to recreate, which is kind of how they think... they think Rey was sort of... So it's... I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if Palpatine was cloned. And I also wouldn't be surprised if he found a way to manipulate midichlorians or the M things that they're counting. And then now that it seems like they're trying to figure out how to transplant them into certain individuals so they can have complete control over the Force. Which is kind of in line with the Sith like, party.
Yeah.
Party line. That's kind of their thing.
Yeah, they're trying to disrupt the balance, basically. Mm-hmm.
Take over the balance. They think that's mm-hmm. balanced.
Yes. That's a very unhealthy way of looking at things. Right. Moving on. The otherness of R2-D2 and C-3PO throughout Star Wars.
So I noticed in episode 4, mm-hmm. when Luke is going down into the cantina with Obi-Wan to find some pilots, the guy behind the bar yells, "Hey, we don't serve their kind here. Get them out of here," or something like that. And I'm just like, that sounds like segregation to me. And I think I'm like, what calls for it? Why? And it's clearly an allusion to segregation. But I'm like, why are the droids othered? Because they depend on droids as well. So why are they othered so much? And then I'm like, maybe it's because of the Clone Wars. I don't know if George Lucas had that conceptualized up yet, but I feel like there is some sort of mistrust in droids because of the Clone Wars.
It would make sense.
That's fair. But I just kind of noticed that they were... Oh, and then there was a scene when they were playing that chess game with Chewbacca where C-3PO says something like, "Well, nobody's scared of losing to a droid." And Han Solo's response was, "Well, they don't normally have their arms ripped off. Droids don't normally rip your arms off.
And beat you with them if you beat..."
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that... Yeah, and I think typically people don't really care about droids' feelings. Because they say also in episode 2 that if droids could think, nobody would be around. And I'm like, well, they do clearly think. Like C-3PO and R2-D2 are, I feel like R2-D2 is at least artificially intelligent. Like that's full intelligence there. Mm-hmm. He's coming up with his own ideas. He's going off script constantly. He's mm-hmm. doing what droids shouldn't do. I don't know. And I think that R2-D2 and C-3PO are lovers.
Okay.
If if they were flesh, I think they'd be lovers.
Okay. I guess I could see that. I'm like, I don't know. I think it's perfectly okay for them to also be asexual.
True. But I think if they were flesh, mm-hmm. I am so positive there's fan
some
fiction.
Companionship there for sure.
Yes.
Yeah. Probably at least queer.
Mm-hmm. kind of like the unsaid relationship between Bert and Ernie.
Right.
You don't have to say anything. There's definitely something special there.
Does it not blow anyone else's mind that Star Wars took place a long time ago? That doesn't suggest the future of sci-fi.
No. But then also, if you consider, every time you look at the stars, you're literally looking in the past because it takes millions and billions and trillions of years to for light to reach our planet. Mm-hmm. So we are literally looking in the past like, okay, maybe like we're watching it currently right now, but it happened trillions of years ago. Maybe that's how we're watching the movies.
Maybe. That's a fun thing to conceptualize.
We figured out how to do that somehow.
So George Lucas's adaptations of 4, 5, and 6, good or bad? I would say bad. I think that he played around with little things that seemed like it was just his sort of vanity and not necessarily interested in all of the things that could have made a better movie. Like, it was about adding in his brainchilds that ended up on the cutting room floor the first time because they didn't have enough CGI to fake it, you know? And so it's like, that maybe there's a reason why it didn't belong then. You know, trying to force that in there, I feel like, gave it a jarringness that, and maybe this is just a generational thing. I grew up with those movies. So when you change something that has been part of my life and my childhood for decades,
it can piss you off.
It's like, oh,
fuck you.
Okay, why did you do that? Why did you feel the need to? And now I can't even find the originals anywhere, except for the ones that I made a point of trying to save. I don't even know if I still have them anymore. They're very difficult to get a hold of, especially on DVD.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's unfortunate. I feel like he didn't rely on the new material to stand on its own and had to alter things about it to try to make it seem more congruent.
Flow.
And I'm like, wasn't necessary.
I wonder what led to those decisions. Like, I wonder if there was a budget thing. I wonder if there was a time thing. I wonder if there was just, maybe he didn't look at his drafts for a really long time and was just trying to dive back into them and be like, wait, how did I connect these things? Like, right. I don't know. I don't know your life, George Lucas.
I mean, maybe he really had an epiphany and it was something that he really obsessed about getting a certain way at a certain point, and that's just what you get when you get tunnel vision. You don't always realize that maybe it didn't need to be reworked and re-released and overriding our history.
I will say I liked episode one, but I think episodes, wait, which ones are we talking about now?
Six through nine. Liked number one.
I liked number one. I didn't care for two or three. I liked episode one. I don't know. There's either they just didn't give those actors enough time to get familiar with each other and build that chemistry because there was, I don't know. I feel like she would have been way too smart to end up with him. I'm sorry, guys. And I know that she got a lot of flack for her acting in those movies, and apparently it really affected her career.
That's too bad.
And I'm just like, she actually wasn't bad, though. She was also very young. She was 16 in the first movie. In, yeah, episode one. Episode two, she was 19. And then 22 in the last one, I think. So she's very young. And I don't know. It might depend on the way that they directed them. It might have depended on the way that it was written. I feel like those
all of those things are very strong contributors, I feel. Because she still put off a very majestic, very mature character.
And I know people also thought that her Queen Amidala voice was, like, really annoying and was, like, dead. But I'm like, that was kind of the point because that was how you couldn't tell the difference between her and Sabe, which was Keira Knightley's character. Or Sabe. I don't know how you say her name. I like Sabe better, but whatever. So I was, like, I thought that was, like, kind of like a royal affect. Like, I thought it was on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But I was also 5 when I watched it.
That makes sense. In the theaters. Makes it easier for them to pretend to be one another. And then when they're not, be themselves and not have to worry as much about people trying to compare. Hey.
Right. Your voice is different. But I think I wrote six. What did I write? This was 4. What was I trying to say? 4 through, I don't know what
his adaptation. Yeah, 4, 5, and 6. A New Hope, Empire, and Return of the Jedi. Like, he changed the endings of the movies. He didn't just touch it up.
I got high, guys.
I thought we were long past that.
I'm sorry. I just got stuck.
Guess what? We're in Australia now.
Yeah. We're going to hop, skip, and jump right on over there.
Yeah.
Because guess what? There are 48,000 Jedis in Australia.
Yeah, that's right, folks. They're legit a religion.
Well, they're fighting to be recognized as a religion, I believe. That they are Jedis. They believe in the Force. I feel like science kind of parallels with some of the Force's stuff. You know, like the entanglement of everything. Kind of sounds familiar to me.
So this is an interesting question. Because I have two theories about this.
Okay, I want to hear.
I feel like that's kind of... Those feel to me like the only real options.
Okay, the question is, does Leia actually remember her mother?
Because as you watch in episode 3, she dies giving birth.
Mm-hmm.
So either Leia's that strong with the Force and it imprinted on her, and she just has this image of her mother's face crying when she first sees her before she dies.
Right.
Like crystallize in her memory.
Mm-hmm.
Which they don't really like address or explain.
She mostly remembers feelings. She was beautiful and sad. Yeah. I mean...
Yeah, so I feel like...
Throughout the pregnancy, buddy. Hey, these babies.
Stop it.
Goodbye.
So I think that there can be a case made for that, but I genuinely feel like they didn't pay attention. Because enough other things that I'm just like, okay.
Wouldn't you have caught that in the remastering, though? That blunder? Like, wouldn't you, like, cut it or, like, dub it with some other stuff? Like,
I think that if you're gonna go back and make a prequel that is 3 movies that leads up to a trilogy that has already been so deeply beloved, that you'd pay attention to that kind of detail and make a point of not just throwing a bone in there. And maybe he didn't really, you know, because oftentimes editing, you can get overwhelmed with detail.
True.
And so maybe there were a boatload of cuts.
It's towards the end as well. It is the end of episode 6, if you guys are a little confused.
Yeah.
Luke asks her before he goes to face Darth Vader if he remembers their mother. And she just like, not really. I remember
feelings.
And that she was very beautiful and sad. And that she died when I was very young.
And then when you go back and actually see the movie that shows them getting born, they also show you that their mother died.
Mm-hmm.
So either she faked her death to get away from Anakin. Oh,
and maybe that's when Obi-Wan Kenobi and Padme had a thing.
Well, then it wouldn't quite explain the tension that they feel beforehand, because there's a big falling out between Anakin and Obi-Wan, and I think Anakin's very jealous, and I think he suspects that there is some feeling there, and he's feeling very insecure and threatened by it.
I feel like the pressure of being the chosen one got to him.
Yeah.
And he was just too immature. I don't think he should have been ever told that. I feel like but also
it's a good example of how that kind of shit fucks kids' heads up. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, but also being more powerful in the Force than your peers would set you apart no matter what.
Yeah.
So you're always going to be othered whether you know why. And maybe the not knowing would be the tipping point that would actually push him into the dark side. Yeah. But something else is used instead. I have another theory.
Okay.
You know how Keira Knightley looks super, super similar to Natalie Portman? I feel like she wasn't actually seeing her mother. I think she was seeing Sabe or Sabe, whatever.
Okay. And maybe that would make sense because isn't that where she's adopted?
She was adopted by the Alderaan royal family, but she is from Naboo.
Right.
But I think I feel like she would have felt it as her obligation to also protect Padme's daughter as well as Pat.
So you don't think that she, I mean, maybe what she's remembering is her mother, her adopted mother, or she actually genuinely believe that she knows she was adopted?
No, she knew she was adopted because I know that they couldn't have children for some reason.
Right.
And so they have been looking to adopt a baby girl. And so I think she knew from the start that she was adopted, or she figured it out because she's very smart.
Yes.
And she was very well educated. And I don't think they would have hidden Sabe from her, and if she'd found out she was adopted, she would have had questions. And so maybe Sabe felt the need to
protect her,
be also her mother, because she was her mother's decoy as well, and that would have necessitated a very close relationship, which apparently is explained in a novel at some point.
there's a handful of really good ones out there that seem to have already fleshed out some really unique things about the mm-hmm. history and what's technically canon for Star Wars. And it really makes me sad that Disney has decided not to honor yeah. that. I'm just like, wow, that was a lot of people's like hard work and effort, and they're actually...
It might be a legal thing, though.
Could be. Could be that they didn't want to have to pay them royalties.
Might have to do with Disney and their legal affiliations with those other publishing companies.
That is true.
And if they didn't sell them the rights to the story. Maybe those authors didn't sell it, and so Disney couldn't use it.
I'm curious. Does anyone out there know?
Oh, yeah. Do we want to talk about our summer plans really quick?
Sure, just briefly before we go. So this is it, guys. We're going to take a break for a while and work on content building because we have some personal things that are going to keep us from being able to do much for a couple of months. And we figured this is the best time mm-hmm. to clean things up and really polish our structure.
Yeah, but we're going to try and get some episodes out over the summer, but we can't promise that there's going to be a consistent schedule to it. Mm-hmm. But keep a lookout. We're also going to be expanding our social media, and we'll keep you updated on that. So we'll try and make
sure to update that. I'd like to get our Discord up and running here too
soon.
Yeah,
guys, we already have a channel.
We have a Discord channel, but I have not put much effort into it. We're not ready. But eventually it would be a neat place to have people bring their minds to the table and throw some ideas out there. I think mm-hmm. it would be really fun to share your stories.
It'd be great because sometimes I really struggle with finding good secondary sources that pull from reliable primary sources. I struggle sometimes.
So keep an eye out for a new series of episodes probably this fall mm-hmm. as we spend the summer concocting some lovely new tales for you. Well, not concocting, collecting.
Yes.
A new cacophony of tales.
Adding tales to our repertoire. Oh, English words.
This has been a delightful journey. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm really grateful for this opportunity.
Thanks for sticking it out with us, guys.
Right?
It was rough in the beginning.
But we were so excited about it. We just kept plugging along. Right on.
Yep. So we'll see you later, guys.
Night.
Night. It's going to be stuck in my head now.